Wiry at 74, he was ready to rain every combination of punches all over Fletch. "Relax," Fletch said. "I made you a hero."
"A hero?"
Mortimer exploded.
"To who?"
"To the world.
The only people I cared about in the world I put in prison thanks to you.
They were bad guys, and you know it.
They were my friends."
Fletch turned his back on Mortimer's fighting stance. Through his nose, he inhaled deeply.
"Fresh air. Don't you just love it?"
"Fresh air?"
Mortimer yelled.
"What's it good for? It smells like nothing. You know how long it's been since I've smelled a bakery?"
Turning full circle, Fletch noticed Ricky had disappeared. Hodja still stood curious under the tree. "I'll send you a loaf of Brooklyn pumpernickel," Fletch said. "You can stick it up your nose." Lithe as a panther, Mortimer came swinging at Fletch.
"I'll rip your nose off you."
Not raising his hands, Fletch ducked and backed up.
"Cut that out."
Pursuing him with perfect footwork, Mortimer said,
"I'll cut your fucking heart out. Your eyes."
Backing up, Fletch's heel tripped on Mortimer's shotgun. Fletch fell to the ground. Resting on his elbows, Fletch said,
"You can't hit me down here."
"Mr. Mortimer?"
Ricky's low voice demanded immediate attention. He was standing in front of the van.
"Mr. Mortimer," Ricky said, "come here, please." His voice was as pervasive as mist. "There is something you must see."
Fists still at the ready, Mortimer studied the boy.
"Can't you see I'm busy? I'm going to make chopped liver out of this
wuss," Hodja said.
Mortimer looked down at Fletch on the ground.
"He's a was, all right. He's a never was. Get up, you bug, you bugger, you journalist."
"If I do, you'll hit me," Fletch said.
"So what's the point? I'll only find myself down here again."
"Ricky, please, Mr. Mortimer."
"All right."
Mortimer aimed a not very serious kick at Fletch's boot.
"What is it?"
He spat on the ground and stamped around the front of the van. Fletch quickly got up and followed them. Ricky had opened the sliding door on the other side of the van.
"What is it?"
Mortimer asked impatiently. Using his well-sculpted head as would a stag, his eyes as would a man who had looked from the top of the mountains, Ricky indicated Mortimer ought to look inside the van. Mortimer looked, then peered, then squinted.
"What is it?"
Crystal let out a little sob. Mortimer stepped up into the van. He looked a moment at Crystal on the bed. He gasped.
"Oh, my dear lady."
He picked up her hand.
"What has happened to you?"
"Oh, Mr. Mortimer,"
Crystal wept.
"I don't know."
"I'm glad you brought her here," Mortimer said. "Now get out."
He had come from behind Fletch through the broken spring door of the old farmhouse. Fletch, feeling shunted aside by all the activity, had been standing on the porch looking out over the plain. A Mrs. Robbins he had found in the kitchen had provided him with a cup of coffee. He had driven through some gorgeous parts of Wyoming to get here, but these acres were desolate. It looked to him as if the grass grew here as thin hay. A cow by herself would need acres to graze. Here even a cow would be lonely. Immediately upon discovering Crystal in the back of the handicap van, Mortimer had begun organizing. While Crystal waited in the van, Hodja and Ricky had dismantled Mortimer's own king-sized bed and lifted its frame, box spring, and mattress to the barn and rebuilt it in a corner of the gymnasium just outside the swing door to the locker room. Mortimer made the bed himself. The gym was not that large, but it was well built. Hardwood floor, a boxing ring in the center, the latest in exercise machines along the far wall, as well as head and body punching bags. The only thing odd about the gym was that the mirrors on the walls were old-fashioned. They were not perfect mirrors. There was a sauna and whirlpool in the locker room, as well as open showers, basins, and toilets. Having some experience at it, Fletch tried to help bring Crystal into her new bed. Silently, firmly, Mortimer, Hodja, Ricky elbowed him aside. They let Fletch run the van's hydraulic lift to lower them all to the ground. On the porch, Fletch said to Mortimer, "You don't really hate me, do you?" Mortimer spat over the porch rail.
"Sure. You did the right thing, Fletch, as far as I was concerned. So did I. I'd seen what was wrong with a boxing game all my life. Never took part in the filth, but I went along with it. Impaling my young contender on that iron fence in Gramercy Park."
"His name was, Shane?"
"Goldblum. Shane Goldblum. Well, it made everything inside me how can I say, hunker down, atomize, and then I came along and gave you a way of blowing up. You see, with my friends in prison, well, when we write back and forth to each other, I blame you for everything, everything I did to them. They deserved it. They're bad guys. Yeah, but they're my bad guys. We grew up together, worked together. Who else? What else do I know? Loyalty may be a virtue, but it's also a convenience. So yeah, I hate you. You made the best of me, so I hate you. What else do you expect? My best boxers came to hate me. I made the best of them. They'd find themselves unique, alone, isolated, just like I am. So they'd blame me, hate me. Most people, I figure, never do anything unusual. They just go along with whatever it is, mediocrity, corruption, because they can't stand the idea of being unique, alone, isolated. Mortimer's blue eyes scanned the field Fletch had just been watching. I've been thinking of importing some pigeons. How do you think they do here? Not well. Not enough used lunch bags. Yeah, well, the place needs used lunch bags, too. Hadja and Ricky seem like nice kids. Hopefully contenders. Sure. That Ricky has some presents. Presents? You haven't noticed? What's presents already? I don't know. Dignity? His own sense of time, space, sight, sound, self-awareness? He's just in love with himself. Somehow he makes you pay attention to him, watch him when he's not doing anything. A boxer? I don't know. So you think you'll be able to help Crystal? You said she's a heavyweight. Yes, I did. A heavyweight challenge, all right. Fletch said, I'll go say goodbye.
You're leaving? Crystal asked. You're leaving me here?
Mr. Mortimer is putting me off the place, Fletch said. Don't hesitate, Mortimer said.
Where are you going?
Somewhere the landscape has more than one line to it. Get out of here, Mortimer said. Ricky, see this bum off the place.
I'll call, Fletch said to Crystal. Tell Jack where I am.
As Fletch was escorted by Ricky out of the gym, Mortimer was saying, Now listen, dear lady. You're not going to lose weight right away. First, we're going to build you some muscle. You'll be losing fat, but you'll weigh the same, because muscle weighs more than fat, you see? So you're not to get discouraged.
Crystal murmured, All I want is to take in the food I need for what I'm doing.
That's very good, Mortimer said. Where did you learn that? By the angle of his head, the way he used his arms and his legs, turning his body into a K, closing the side door of the van, somehow Ricky made Fletch watch him do it. Mortimer may have developed the kid's body, but the kid's presence was as natural to him as the color of his hair. Fletch said, I notice you don't use contractions. Ricky said, I do not. He opened the van's door for Fletch. Bye, Fletch said. Goodbye. Chapter 15.
You there.
Walking his bike on a gravel path skirting the side of Vendemia's main house, Jack looked up. An older woman was calling to him from a balcony. Wisps of her graying hair and her light bathrobe were being blown by the wind.
Come here.
She pointed to an open arched doorway beneath her balcony.
Go in there. Come up the steps.
Overhead, the 10 huge flags on the roof were snapping imperiously in the wind. He leaned his bike against a wall, went through the arch and up the stone stairs in the wall of the house. She was the woman he had seen possibly weeping in the back of the chauffeur-driven Stretch Infinity the day he arrived.
Do I know you? She asked him. I mean, have we done this together before?
What? Jack asked.
I need someone to take out my rubbish, she said.
Oh.
People keep forgetting, she said, to take out my rubbish.
I see.
I need this help.
Okay.
You look like the last boy who used to help me.
We're infinitely replaceable, Jack said.
I'm glad you realize that. He was my friend.
She stuck a bill into the pocket of his shorts.
Will you be my friend?
Sure.
It's just this bag over here.
On the floor of the balcony near the French doors was a green garbage bag.
People keep forgetting it, you see.
I see.
If you'd just dispose of it for me.
Sure. When he picked up the bag, its contents clanged.
That will be all.
Looking straight ahead, she went through the French doors into the house. Jack found the latticed yard behind the kitchen of the house, where the many covered rubbish barrels were placed in wooden hatched bins.
The area was as scrubbed as a surgery. Jack lifted the garbage bag into a barrel. Then he opened the garbage bag. Within were many vodka bottles, a few sherry bottles, port bottles, brandy bottles, all empty. There were also many differently shaped pill vials, all empty. The names of the prescription drugs on the typed labels meant little or nothing to Jack. Instructions limited the number of each pill taken daily and usually recommended taking upon rising or at bedtime. They were prescribed by various doctors, McMasters, Donovan, Harrison, and Childs. All the prescriptions were for Amelie Radley. Jack would have thought the woman had just cleaned out her medicine chest of years' accumulations, but all the dates on the prescription labels were within the last few weeks. He retied the top of the garbage bag and closed the hatch. Walking back to his bike, he took out the bill Mrs. Radley had stuffed into his pocket and looked at it. It sure was an easy way to make $50. Chapter 16. "Are you marrying Chet?" Jack asked. "Yes," Shauna answered. "Why?" Jack had walked his bike down to the swimming pool and left it leaning against a wall. Shauna Stoffel was swimming her laps. Otherwise, the pool area was empty. Jack waited for her to finish. He sat in a chair in the shade of the wall nearest the house. He could not be seen there from any of the windows, balconies of the house which overlooked the pool generally. He had learned that trick from Nancy Dunbar regarding the office windows next to the Japanese garden. A small jet airplane circled over Vindemia to land at the estate's airfield. Shauna had not seen Jack when she first came out of the water. "Hey," he had said in a low voice. Drying her head with a towel, she had walked over to him. Today she was wearing a yellow bikini, which brought wonderful light to her skin. Now sitting on a cushioned chair near Jack, she said, "So, you know about Chet?" "What do I know about Chet?" She said, "He likes boys." "Does he like girls, too?" She shrugged. "No way, Jose." "Then why are you marrying him?"
"It's an arrangement."
"So Dr. Radley knows his son is gay?"
"Yes, this is the arrangement he has made for his son."
"It's more than an arrangement, it's a deal."
"It's a deal."
"What happens to Chet if he doesn't accept this deal?" Shauna tried to make herself more comfortable in her chair.
"Not stated."
"What's inferred?"
"Chet worries he'll be cut off, find himself on some South Pacific island selling pocket mirrors."
"Nonsense, he must have his own abilities."
"You know what I mean."
"No, I don't know what you mean."
"It's all or nothing. If Chet wants the benefits of being Chester Radley's son, which benefits are considerable, he has to conform to a pattern of behavior, at least image, which permits him to accomplish all that Chester Radley's son can. That's reasonable, isn't it?"
"Do you have any idea how Chet himself feels about this?" Beautiful in her yellow bikini and her cushioned white rattan chair, Shauna looked uncomfortable.
"Rage," she cleared her throat.
"What?"
"Rage. He's enraged. He's got his nose right up against a brick wall. His father pushed him into sports, football in particular. Chet found himself building this hunk body, became All-American. His father pushed him academically. Chet became Phi Beta Kappa, history. His father pushed him through law school. You see, Chester had this plan for him all along. Chet always knew he was gay. He was straight with his father about it. When Chet discovered his father had had this book written for him, he was furious, hurt. When he discovered his father had established what you might call a retirement plan for the local incumbent congressman, he was even more furious. He flunked the bar exam. I believe he flunked it on purpose. Chet had never failed at anything in his life. He knows for a certainty that whatever he does, he cannot satisfy his father. Being gay doesn't worry Chet at all. It's that he can't satisfy his father no matter what he does. He can't get away from his father's arrangements unless he gets entirely away, gives up everything, do you see?"
"I guess."
"Do you have a, you know what I mean, father, Jack?"
"Yes."
"Does any of this seem familiar to you?"
Jack shook his head.
"He's never been a problem to me, not enough of a one." "That's nice."
"Unusual, I guess. I mean, I don't know what I mean."
"Fathers are confusing."
"I guess."
"I told you about my father."
"Yes."
"A cheap, undisciplined weasel of a man who gladly rapes truth for a Mercedes-Benz."
"So it was Dr. Radley who chose you to be Chet's wife?"
"Yes. He brought me here last spring on the pretext of business and told Chet that he, Chet, is to marry me."
"How did Chet react to that?"
"He gets to keep his, whatever, his stable boys." Shauna, Jack asked, are you and Dr. Radley lovers?
Yes, Shauna answered.
I see. Are you real lovers?
Oh, yes. Chester doesn't play around.
Oh. We have been for over a year, since we found ourselves alone one weekend in Berlin. Neither one of us planned it, expected it. I didn't. To me, Chester was big boss, as formal as a royal reception. It was unimaginable to me he would ever react, relate to me in any way, except as courteous boss. There was a snowstorm. Some business people didn't show up for dinner. We found ourselves having dinner together, laughing, then throwing snowballs at each other in the street, then licking the snow off each other's faces, then in bed together. Have you met Mrs. Radley?
Briefly.
She can't stand success. She thought she was marrying a college instructor. She found herself some kind of an empress. It depressed her totally. Some people can't stand changes. Her misery depressed him totally. She works at it. She made him miserable. Chester could never bring himself to divorcing the poor mess. I understand that. Well, her misery depresses him less now.
Since you two got together.
Since he discovered it's her nature and there's nothing he can do about it.
Then she said,
yes, since we got together.
Does Chet know you and his father are lovers?
No, he thinks I'm marrying him for money, social position.
Shauna, you've been frank about everything else. Are you doing this for money, social position?
I really love Chester.
She seemed more comfortable in her chair.
I believe you do. I love him deeply. I never dreamed of knowing, loving such a man. I never could have conceived such a man existed, or that such a man would need me, love me.
I'm beginning to get the picture, Jack said. Chet in Washington, you here at Vindemia.
Sounds nice to me.
Would you have children by Chester?
We've talked about it. I would like to.
Surely then Chet would know you and his father are lovers.
Shauna smiled. I expect there would be a proper family resemblance among the children.
Jack said. I can't think what could go wrong in such a marriage.
She smiled. Convenient.
As you said, very convenient.
So, Shauna said, you know about Chet, and me, and Chester. What a good little investigative reporter you are. What else do you know? Who's threatening Chester?
Now I see the level of your concern.
I think I'm the only one who is concerned about him.
You may be, you and Mrs. Houston.
She's a good old thing.
There was the sound of children in the air.
It's pretty sad, Jack said. Mrs. Radley must be half crazed with drink and drugs.
Eccentric, Shauna said. Duncan seems to have a taste for drugs of another kind.
Is that what's wrong with him? I thought he was just a dumb slob.
That too. He lies, he cheats, he wants $650,000 for a new car.
Let him ride a bike.
Alexis thinks she would like life better without her father interfering.
Without her father, Alexis would be standing on a street corner in white boots and a leather miniskirt.
Beauville, we're being invaded, Shauna said. A boy about 9 years old, naked except for water wings, entered the pool area. Big-eyed, he stared across at them.
Chester the Third, Shauna said, except I forget his last name.
Among them, Amy's 7 children have 3 different last names.
Jack said, I guess we're not supposed to be caught in social intercourse, you and I, but none of the other rules around here seem to be unbroken.
Shauna said, rules ought not be broken.
One by one, 4 more children tottered into the pool area. Except for water wings, they were all naked. Their bodies were entirely tanned. Their bodies all had good shape to them, less baby fat and more muscle than usual for such young children. A gaunt woman carrying a 2-year-old entered the pool area. She was followed by a uniformed nanny carrying an infant.
Jack stood up. I guess I'd better go.
Me too.
Where are you going? Jack asked. What are you going to do now?
Why? Just curious. I wondered what you do around here, how you spend your time. I wonder what Vindemia means to you.
I'm going to the gym to work out.
So you can mention to Dr. Radley that you did?
Because I want to.
Jack crossed to the wading pool. The gaunt woman was setting the 2-year-old into the water.
I don't know your name, he said to the gaunt woman.
Amy McDowell is the short version.
Well, I guess I should leave, Jack said to her, now that you're all here.
I wish you wouldn't.
She waved goodbye to Shauna as she left the pool.
We could use an extra pair of eyes. Lifeguard.
Oh, okay.
Jack returned to his chair in the shade. Happily, the children were jumping off the edge of the pool to splash each other. They did not lack for energy. Amy carried the infant into the shade. She sat in the chair near Jack, where Shauna had sat. She began to suckle the infant.
"You didn't tell me your name," she said.
"Jack." She pointed to one of the boys.
"His name is Jack. John. Named after his father."
Of the 7 children, 4 were boys.
"These are all your children?" "Yes, aren't they beautiful?"
"Yes."
"I do this really well."
"What?"
"Have children. It took 3 husbands so far, but each one of them was handsome, healthy, and bright enough."
"You're not yet 30?
29.
"Wow. 7 children while you're under 30. Pardon me, I just haven't met that before." She laughed. "And you want more children?" he asked.
"Yes, lots."
"Good thing you're rich."
"Yes, isn't that nice? Has anyone ever told you what a pleasure it is to nurse a baby?"
"It looks nice."
"Envious of little Robert here?"
"I guess so."
"Were you nursed?"
"I have no idea."
"Then I suspect you weren't. I believe nursed babies are much better off."
"Your husband's..." "Never mind." She laughed.
"Well, in order to have all these children, you see, really I'm better off living here at Vindemia, where there's plenty of help. The men I've married think they would be happy living here, but in time they discover they're not a bit happy. Each has found Vindemia much too confining."
"I can understand that."
"And here they either work for my father or they don't work. There isn't anything else to do. Slowly they get restless and finally, you know, make the speech of apology, say they can't take it anymore, they have to go live their own lives. We're all good friends, I and my ex-husbands, that is. I understand."
"You wanted these kids pretty badly, didn't you?"
"Oh, yes. Don't you think having lots of nice children is a good use of wealth?"
Jack said, "I've seen worse uses."
Politely, conversationally, Amy then asked Jack personal questions, where he'd been born, brought up, schooled. He answered as well as he could. She said, "You're old enough to be married. You never were?"
"No."
"I expect you have a fairly hopeless view of marriage."
"Well, except to have children, maybe."
"Don't you want children?"
"I don't know."
"Sure," she said, "it's the only reason to get married, just to keep the paperwork straight."
Jack said, "Shedding yourself of 3 husbands must have cost more than a little."
"Oh, that," she said, "I have a way of handling my father."
"How's that?" he asked.
"If he doesn't do what I want, I'll tell the world he sexually abused me as a child."
"Is it true?"
"Of course not. But he manipulates, tries to control everybody. One has to have a way of manipulating him, don't you agree? His reputation, that he's Mr. Perfect himself, perfect husband, father of a perfect family, is his soft spot. It's the only weapon I have, you see."
"It's not very nice."
"It works."
"Would you actually use it, say such a thing?"
"Of course, and he knows it."
The oldest boy, about 9 years old, was standing between Jack's knees.
"What's your name?" he asked.
"Jack."
"Jack, will you come play with us?"
Jack wasn't sure he wanted to play with the children in the pool. He was sure he wanted no more of the conversation with Amy McDowell. Suddenly, the beautiful day, the beautiful flowers, the beautiful pool, the beautiful children seemed to have become splattered by something foul.
"Go ahead," Amy said.
Jack stood up. "If I touch your naked children in the swimming pool, will I be accused of sexual child abuse?" His voice sounded stronger to him than he had intended.
"Of course not,"
Amy chuckled.
"What would be the point?"
Jack enjoyed himself more than he thought. Cupping his hands underwater, one by one the children stepped into his hands so he could lift them out of the water and fling them backward. They landed on their backs, laughing, making lovely splashes. The children then began a game of King of the Mountain with him, each trying to climb him, sit on his shoulders, throw the others off. His hair got pulled and his ears tugged. The children wriggled around with the energy and humor of monkeys. The games continued longer than he had expected.
"Jack,"
Amy called him from the side of the pool. "You'd better come out of the water now. Your back is bleeding." Jack put his own hand on his back and saw it was so.
"Besides," Amy said, "the sun will scar your cut."
While Jack was putting on his socks and sneakers, Amy said to him, "Don't tell anybody what I told you. I'd hate to have Alexis use it against my father, too. You know what I mean?" Chapter 17.
"You make sweet sounds come out of that string box."
Jack was sitting in the woods, his back against a tree, strumming his guitar. His bike was propped against another tree. First a boxer dog had bounded into the little clearing in the woods. Then a tall, lean, older man wearing walking shorts and horn-rimmed glasses came along the path. The man had a long, very straight back.
Don't get up, Dr. Radley said. And don't stop playing. I like it. May I sit down, Jack?
Jack resettled his back against the tree.
They're your woods, Dr. Radley.
God's woods. God's world. We're just the caretakers.
Radley sat cross-legged on a tuft of grass. He chuckled.
If I were God, I'd fire us, wouldn't you?
If you were God, would you fire you?
Jack asked.
I tried to keep my patch neat.
Radley looked around at the planted forest. Make the most of it.
How does one play a guitar?
I've been doing it so long.
Jack did a short riff.
Just let your fingers play, I guess.
After a lunch of sandwiches and milk in his cottage, Jack had strapped the guitar on his back and gone for a bike ride around Vindemia. There were only a few cars outside the business offices on Saturday afternoon. Beauville's BMW was one. There were more than a dozen small airplanes, both jets and propeller-driven, parked neatly on the airstrip. As Jack watched, an ancient yellow two-seater wobbled down the sky and made a perfect landing. There seemed to be only one person, the pilot, a man, in it. Again, there were only a few cars outside the country club. The tennis courts, the pool area, and greens were devoid of people. While heading toward the airstrip, a gray Infiniti sedan with tinted windows passed Jack. Another passed him from behind before he went on the road around the country club. Jack presumed guests were arriving in the airplanes and then being ferried to the main house for the party that night. Beyond the clubhouse, Jack found a timber road heading off to the right. Intersecting with it were walking riding trails. He jounced his bike along one until he came to a clearing where he thought he'd be alone. He'd been playing his guitar for only about 20 minutes. Another plane went overhead, low. Dr. Chester Radley looked up through the trees from where he sat cross-legged on the ground.
Lots of guests arriving.
He smiled at Jack.
Good time to take a walk.
You know my name, Jack said. Radley nodded.
Jack Faoni.
The dog climbed onto Radley's crossed legs and lay down on them. He settled his chin on Radley's knee. Radley said,
This guy's name is Arky. He thinks I belong to him.
Arky?
Archimedes.
Of course.
Wanted to name a son that, but Mrs. Radley would have none of it.
Name a son after a screw? Jack smiled.
Never mind.
Conversationally, Radley said,
A few days ago, my elder son Chet surprised me. He met me at the stables at dawn. He had saddled two horses. We had a great ride together.
Jack waited for the point of this comment. Radley said no more. Jack asked,
Where was Peppy that morning?
I don't know.
Searching for a point, Jack asked, How many days was this before your favorite horse died?
All days, Radley answered. 3 or 4 days. He patted the dog's head.
Things like that don't happen as often as I expected they would.
Like what? Jack asked.
Oh, just one of the kids joining me for a ride.
Thinking about Radley, Jack played a short, fast ditty on the guitar. Jack was thinking he had never before met a mind like Radley's. The man was a certified genius, but there was something childlike in what Radley had just said. Or was it subtle, profound? Radley was surprised his children did not join him for rides. Radley was surprised his son one day did join him for a ride. Therefore, what? When Jack had asked Nancy Dunbar why the need for all the security and spying at Vindemia, she had said, Dr. Radley does not lack surprises. Perhaps Radley's mind was on a plane so different from the average person's that everything about humans surprised him. Intensely, Radley had watched Jack's fingers play the ditty.